Mr. Cheeseman, reel 22. How long were you at Harpenden?
Yes, it's rather difficult. We were. They always say when you're enjoying yourself, time passes quickly. We enjoyed ourselves there, and looking back, it seemed to stretch right out. September the 4th, war broke out, I would say 3 weeks, fortnight or 3 weeks after that, we were in Harpenden. And we left about a week after we returned, well, early in January, to go down back to Salisbury Plain again. Well, just off Salisbury Plain, actually.
Did the tanks move on the roads going down or by rail?
They were going by rail. They began to realise that even well into the war, they didn't seem to realise that every mile that the tank did was very, very valuable, and it should be kept for action, not for training, you know. But no, it was rail trucks at Harpenden Station on the.
And you went back to where, did you say?
We did, I say, generally speaking, we said we went back to Salisbury Plain. Actual fact, we went down to Alderbury, which was about 5 miles southeast of Salisbury, city of Salisbury. And I know there was. There's graffiti going around even in those days, but I think it was more intelligent graffiti. And I remember this chalked up somewhere about having left the wonderful flesh pots of Harpenden with our wonderful billets, and now we're camped in Stonehenge, which is a bit drafty. Well, it's always rhyming, you know. Rather good, but actually, my billet in Alderbury was very, very romantic. Roses, well, that time of the year, but there was roses, bushes along the door, such a cottage, and we had the upstairs, and our landlady was very, very, well, she was a woman before her time. Because she was not married and had two sons, which was unthinkable in those days, you know. But these days, so I heard she was leaving for a day, wasn't she? She married us, she really did. We used to go to the cookhouse lorry, 5 minutes, at Alderbury. Breakfast is there, and you want to go to, come on up, you know, because she had plenty of eggs and what have you, and a big girl. By the way, she lived with her two sons and her father. He was a great gardener. Again, we purloined a garage in Salisbury for our workshop, but then we were getting ready, obviously, for moving over.
What happened to garage owners that had to give the garages up to you?
It would no doubt be very, very welcome. They would get money compensation, and of course the garage business would dip, because where did the fighting forces get all that extra money from? You know. And
were you getting some requisitioned lorries into your unit?
Well, I'll tell you something. The couple of coaches to take, three was it? Anyway, there were some coaches to take the personnel, because the tanks went by and we pitches and what have you. They needed coaches to take the personnel down from Harpenden to Salisbury. One of those coaches was a Northern. Oh, God. Oh, yes.
That's a Northern bus from the north of England.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I never did get to drive it either. Because that was the ambition of every northeasterner was first, a boy, was first of all going to be an engine driver. And if it could be that, it'd be Northern Bus Drive.
So you were billeted on local families?
Yes.
Throughout the town or village that you were in?
It happened, and we were in this...
Yes, but I'm down at Aldbury.
Yes, in families at all, yes. As a matter of fact, no good now, but I've always been reasonably good with the old paints and brush and pencil and what have you. And just over the hedge from where I was living was quite a large house and a couple of old ladies, and they asked us if we got well enough, and there was a hut in their garden there which was on a slope, and you could see a vista, and had all the artists' material, easels and all that, because the side looking over this vista was glass side, you know, and one of the old ladies was an artist. Well, there we go. More about that later, very much later in my talk.
So what were you doing down there?
It was really marking time, just waiting to go over to France, really. By this time, we had been sort of seconded, or brought into what was called the 3rd Armoured Brigade, and we went over to France. January, February, March. March or April, or something like that. It was still very cold. I know, first of all, the preparations for going is the tanks had to be sort of put to bed, as it were. Put into full working order, but sort of put to bed because it wasn't a very fun scene. But the lorries also, the canopies had to be dropped, what have you, and also put to bed, that everything was okay. And I, as a driver of the fitted wagon, stayed with me while he was, the rest of them went on the train. We met at Southampton.
Before we come back, the winter of 1939-40, was that pretty severe?
It was, when we were old.
How did you keep engines from freezing up and so forth on tanks and lorries?
You didn't burn them off each night. And that, by the way, obviously you have an engine that's out of water, you don't start it up, do you? We did. But we knew just, you know, I started up the thing like that and switch it off now and then put the water in. Because if you put the water in, water hitting iron, which is below freezing point, before you got started, was frozen in there. So you started your engine up, and then started putting the water in, actually, while the engine was running. But, there's never any instructions. But there was lots of things we did, there was never any instructions.
You moved then from 1st to 3rd Tank Brigade, like you said.
Yeah.
Who was commanding that brigade?
Crocker, but now you will appreciate the fact that my memories are the horizons of my memories are coming in now, not only as far as my battalion, but even to my lorry. You know, communications over in France was just about non-existent, as it were. But no need to dwell upon that.
Do you recall the journey, leaving England and going over there? How did you feel about going abroad?
I think, when we were ready to go abroad, I was apprehensive now. Not desperately so. If I could say 45% apprehensive and 55% another experience, But it was there, and it was very real. But what you say, how do I feel going across it? The reason I hesitated there was I was thinking about how I felt on the boat as whilst we were going there. Going down to Southampton, I was too busy driving, of course. I've got to do a camp at Southampton, and it's already white and have the rest of the evening off. So we went into Southampton, and I saw a picture over the rainbow. So that sticks in my mind, absolutely, you know, at somewhere over the rainbow. Next morning, down to the docks. I'm jumping ahead here. I don't know whether that was the first night or otherwise. But whilst I was in Southampton, I saw that picture that sticks in my mind. Of course, it's coming back now. We were in Southampton for 2 or 3 days because we became stevedores, fitters, staying in hotels on board, what have you. Then I said, that's right, the last, we're on our way the following day. And I think it was that night we went to see it. And we went, took the lorries down to the docks for them to get on board, and we stayed there all day. But we stayed, and we went over on a ferry boat in the middle of the night. Reason. I had my overcoat on, of course we had full packing, what have you. And you know these wooden lat seats that are there? There was a steam leak from one of the steam winches. Going back a bit now, aren't we? But steam leak had come, and it was quite warm. Well, that's what for me for tonight. So I laid on this, and I was quite warm for the vast majority of the night. And what I hadn't realised, stupidly it was, it steam condenses. My overcoat was about 3 tons in weight this morning, and bitterly cold. So
were you travelling on the open deck?
Open deck, yes. Well, it had got about 4 or 5 times more people on the soldiers than it ever had carried before. The saloons were filled and everything. You couldn't move, and so I went over on open deck, and that's, thank goodness it was a nice bright morning when we got to landed at Cherbourg.
What do you recall was your first view of France?
Cherbourg.
And how did you feel there? What was it like?
I was still in England. To the extent that I'll not forget, there were 2 or 3 occasions I kept saying, "Hey mate, I'm the Lord of Lords."
What did you think of the French that you were meeting for the first time?
Just interesting, that's all. I couldn't form an opinion at all. Mind you, I did form an opinion of one certain French lady we had moved out of. We got everything on board. I mean, I'm now jumping ahead 2 or 3 days because we had to unload tanks and everything like that. And the tanks had gone and we were coming away, but we were still in the lorry convoy. And we got 10 miles or so out of Cherbourg, and the lorry stopped, and the column had stopped for quite a while. And out comes this wonderful French lady, meticulously dressed, early 40s, with a huge tray of tea, in bone china teacups and what have you like that, and offered it to us. And she could speak perfect English as well. Thank you so much. That's hit the spot, lovely. And we were enjoying our tea when the officer in charge of the column came along. "Stop! Get out! Stop drinking tea! Woman, get indoors!" "Get colonists!" "How naive can we get it?" It could quite well be in the snow, but She never asked her, as far as I remember, it was just, you know, a nice day and whatever, that sort of thing. But it sort of, I think I could say that was the first time that I said, I'm a friend. Yes.
Where did you go to after leaving Cherbourg? Your first main stop.
Now it does get... Oh, by the way, I'd not slept throughout that night. I'd been up since 4 o'clock in the previous day. And so that incident with the tea is about the only thing that sticks in my mind, because I was half dead about sleep. And I don't think I ever recovered whilst I was in France. You know, it was getting to me, whether I liked it or not, it was getting to me. And so we got up north of Abbeville somewhere, I think, before we stopped and sort of, what's the word?
Concentrated,
regrouped, as it were, whatever. And then the tanks went off into battle. Whilst we stayed, we hear the battle going on.
So this would be May, because German invasion came May the 10th.
Well, as I say, I can only look at the books, and the dates in the books will be Dunkirk, right? Well, it couldn't have been much more than 3 weeks, perhaps, before Dunkirk that we got there. We did have a skirmish, and we actually did, this is quite apart from the Arras do, we actually did stop Jerry. Well, he got his breath back, of course.
So you went to Abbeville, and presumably from there you got involved with the German advance.
That's right, yes.
And do you recall where these actions were taking place?
I cannot recall at all. All I can sort of recall is the sort of being behind there. For instance, there was one occasion where we said, we're going along the line of lorries, and the ammunition lorry, they had quite a number of chaps out digging trenches and burying ammunition. What the heavens did that for? You've probably heard of the boys' gun, haven't you?
Boys' anti-tank rifle.
Yes, give you clarity of a spy. We took practice rounds for the boys' gun over and just go in there. And they didn't leave it, otherwise the Germans said, very lucky. So we had to sort in all that sort of thing. That's one effort. Another one was we were now beginning to realise that there was a good side of being at war, i.e. Living off the land. And by the way, we have to live off the land. I never, ever had a meal cooked by the army whilst I was in France. Not once. We lived off the land. And that is the other thing. Friend of mine, he was a gunner in Lake Tank, Marxist Lake Tank. Coming to this farmyard, there's no farmers again, no animal in this area. There was a cockerel on the hill. He said, "Oh, roast chicken for some of the lads." And he turned his gun on it. Of course, there's nothing but ferrets. But I can remember instances like going into a farmyard and seeing a pig hung up and slaughtered correctly, and that's what we're going to have to eat. And, raiding the larders and the pantries of houses and what have you for food.
And these had they families in them?
Oh, they've gone. We were still not to descend to that level. I mean, we were still saying, we shouldn't do this, hunger, the Germans will get it, great, that sort of thing. And when you come to think of it, obviously I was in shock. And you can't remember things clearly. And gradually I was coming out of shock. And when I was coming out of shock, we were on our way back. I remember when we withdrew, and I thought, oh, going back a little bit, I didn't take the six-wheeler
Crossley
over to France. We were given an Austin through Tunner, four-wheeler, which was, it was a Bedford all but for the name, you know. And it had just the new morning windscreen, as we call it. And that's where I took over to France. Anyway, we retreat and got into this wood. I said, right, you are, lads, you've got the tonight's rest here, so far. And I remember this quite distinctly. I haven't had any clothes off for about 4 days. I'm going to get them. Oh, definitely, you know. Get into bed. But by the way, the lads were okay and lying on ammunition gun boxes, because you carry the spare guns for the tanks and that, you know. They were okay in the back. And I used to sleep along, because there was a bench seat, not individual bunker seat, along the driver, the second driver bench on the front. And what I would do is put the canopy up and unfold the storm sheets and things like that. It was quite cozy in there. And I said, right, that's what I did. So I took my clothes off, what have you, got into bed properly, and of course by this time I'd known how to get a hold of quite a bit of rum, and I was issued with a rifle, by the way, because I was a lorry driver, and the rifle was there, and pouch, you know, the pouch for the loader, that was empty ammunition, that was for me rum, what have you, an old newspaper about 3 weeks old from the nursing. Dashboard light on, and it was great. Sit in the room, reading the paper, thing like that. Yes, I feel like that. And I was just ready to doze off, thing like that. When a hand came in through the storm guard, she said, wake up, full of the red light in front of you. That's the, the tail. Well, it wasn't tail light, it was on the full of the light in front of you. But I'm under it, get cracking, and I could hear the lorry. So, pulled the bedroll to bits as far as possible so that the legs were clear, and started, of course, so that you could start them all. Started up and followed the light in front of me. And of course, I said, well, the first time it stopped, which is bound to be in about 5-10 minutes, and it's bound to stop, I'll put my dress on. You can get myself dressed. Of course, once more, it never bloody well did stop, did it? I think I've still got the imprint of the clutch and the pedal on my left foot, the brake pedal. I'm like frozen. However, of course, there's one thing to guard against the cord, isn't there? In the bottle. I think I must have drunk half a bottle in the house. That was gone. I can remember them pulling me out, when it was light, pulling me out the door and saying, you know, stop it and try.
But you got your clothes on.
I've got my clothes on in the meantime. How, I don't know, but I got them on in the meantime.
Was there a great deal of rum given out to?
Yes.
Why was this? Is it because you had a particularly cold job in a?
No, it's a general issue. At night time. Instead of silver or what have you, you go along to quartermaster's lorry and things like that, and you would dish yours, and it was always, blah, do you want to drink? Yes, blah, 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 say when, sort of thing. That was a ration. But also, of course, there was a lot of looted as well, because there was, there for the taking as well.
Did that cause problems with drunkenness or?
No.
You never had that problem.
Now, we obviously stayed for the rest of the day where we were, because the following day, anyway, that I would come up to me, drunk and haze, as it were, and I was back in the seat, and I was astonished the first time I'd ever seen it. The amount of refugees on the road. Really, really. You couldn't get on them, you know. And incidentally, of course, we'd been dive bombed as well.
And you'd actually had that happen to you?
Yes.
What's the feeling? How did you experience that?
Unbounded terror. Really unbounded. That's the first time. The second time, yes, just as much. But you never lost that terror. But you began to have a, put it this way, 100% of your mind is full of terror. By the time you've been, I don't know how many, many, many times, 99.9% of your brain is terror, but that 1.1% is beginning to say, hey, you know, that sort of thing.
Were you standing still, parked, when you were first dive-bombed?
I can't, I was drunk. I can't remember, but...
this was the occasion.
But the point is that next day, we'd obviously... Well, we'd gone through, I remember going through Aberdeen, and we were going slowly south, or the southwest actually, we didn't get there. And we just got, anyway, the battalion's technical officer overtook us and said, one hour chance has been hit in the rear guard action, get back and see what you can do, if you can repair it, and if you can't, take the crew on board and for God's sake, get out of there as quick as possible. So we turned around, and by the way, this is of course army training. Yes, sir. Very good, sir. Bovington came in here, otherwise he'd go for your pipe to him on the way. Well, I wouldn't. I would have done if I'd been allowed to be the sergeant, so I didn't sit charity. So we went back north of Aberdeen to where the tank had been hit. Now, my mind now is clear. I'm beginning now to live again. So remember that very, very, very clearly. Not only the tank had been hit, but a chap who I joined up with, he'd never been great friends, but he joined up with me and killed
him. Was he lying there?
No, I don't remember, but anyway, the crew was in shock as well.
But he was the only one killed in the crew, was he? Was he in the tank or out of the tank?
They pulled him out of the tank, you see, and they were in shock. We said, well, we looked, and there was no good, the tank was no good. And we were told not to set it on fire, by the way, because that's a marker for, you know. And
did you take out any particular parts that you didn't want to fall into German hands? There was nothing of that, too.
We were more concerned about our dead friend. And we did stop and bury him there.
You dug a grave next to the tank?
Yeah. And of course it's dump tanks.
And how did you mark the grave?
The haft of a pickaxe, you know, and across like that. And we got them on board. And
his dog tags, did you put that over the cross or something as a marker?
One on his wrist, and the other one my sergeant took, because it was a warrant officer tank commander. He was in a dreadful state as well. Funny, isn't it? We never condemned him. Never condemned anybody for being frightened. You know, we accepted, that's it.